Sandmaster, destroying his power and potentially resulting in his demise.
Who told you that?
Why, the Mastrals.
Exactly. Aloran, what if it has all been a lie? Ever since my first day in the Diem, I have been warned against overmastery. It was called evil, destructive, selfish. As Acolytes, we were instilled with a powerful compulsion not to overmaster. But what if it was all a lie?
A lie by whom?
The Mastrals.
Oh, ho, ho. Now, I'm not the one to stand in the way of a good bashing of authority, friend. But don't you think you're being a little bit presumptuous?
Not really. You know how the Mastrals love to hoard power. If there were a way to increase the number of ribbons a Sandmaster controls, I'd swear on the Sandlord that the Mastrals would keep it a secret. Aloran, haven't you ever wondered why powerful Undermastrals can never control more than 9 ribbons, yet even weak Mastrals can control 18 or 20?
That is because they are Mastrals. Mastrals are special.
Special because they know how to increase their power. Don't you see, Aloran? It makes sense. The taboos against overmastery, they are all just to keep anyone else from discovering the secret.
And what if the overmastery kills you?
That is the wisdom of the Diem.
You know, the guards in the tower told me that the only way to build muscles was to exercise to the point that you're sore. What if the only real way to controlling more ribbons is to overmaster, to build those muscles, just like the tower guards do?
What are you saying?
What if one has to overmaster to increase one's abilities?
Ace had found a small window in the morning where she could return to her office in the Hall of Judgment to discuss ongoing investigations. She sat at her desk, poring over maps and documents, as her second, Tane, awaited her analysis.
You will strike here at the boat races.
Tane leaned in close. He was doing a fine job of being second now that Jadan was dead. Tane was much smarter than he appeared. Even if his features, a large flat nose and bushy unkempt eyebrows, didn't give any hint to that fact. At least one thing was comforting. If Ace couldn't lead the band personally, at least her replacement was competent.
Should we wait for you, ma'am?
Alas, my current assignment keeps me away from my duties here. And this cannot wait. This is our best chance to cut into Sherzan's profits.
How?
Look here. The bookkeepers show a huge influx of money in private accounts over the last month. Now here, what do you see?
Winning lists.
See any patterns?
No, it looks completely random. The results are in line with separate odds for the boats.
No, they're not. Maybe in the individual cases, but not on a large scale.
I still can't see it, ma'am.
The outside lanes win more than the inside ones. It doesn't matter which boats are in those lanes, they tend to beat the odds. Sheazan's too smart to rig the races so that a single boat is favored. That's too obvious. But if he can work it so that certain lanes win more than others, he can steadily make money. He just has to tell his people to bet on the outside. Eventually, over time, it will pay off.
Very devious. All right, ma'am. We'll set up observation.
Good. Thank you, Tane. Is there anything else?
You may have already heard, ma'am. Lochmullen cut a deal while in custody. Gave up 2 names in exchange for the judge's clemency. Important men in his organization. We're looking into them now.
Good.
We're getting close to Sherazin, Ace. But if I may speak plainly, your presence here on the investigation is missed.
In 9 days, my assignment will be over, Tane. And it will have been worth it to eradicate the Sandmasters.
Agreed.
Sherzan's getting desperate, and he'll make mistakes soon enough. I just wish I could head the investigation. Instead, I'm stuck nursemaiding the Rakensha and his unholy Diem. I've barely seen my husband and daughter in days. Nor have I been able to attend Kareen worship services. I'm to go to purification rituals once all of this is done. But it will be worth it. These are historic times. The end of the Sandmasters. For now, however, my nursemaid duties call. Let's go.
Ace left the room with Tane, and the two went their separate ways with a swift salute. Ace felt she was close to Nilto. Lochmullen had been convicted of murder a few days before. That's why he had given up the names. Neither of them was Nilto, of course, but both were very important men in his organization. If Ace could cut off enough of Nilto's revenue, he would grow desperate. Desperate men made mistakes. Unfortunately, Ace knew that desperate men were also capable of incredible cruelty, especially men like Nilto. Ace had ordered a pair of tracks to keep constant surveillance on Melis, while silently cursing her inability to head the investigation. She understood the Lady Judge's need, but her timing couldn't have been worse. All of the tension had put Ace on edge, and she was finding it more and more difficult to maintain control. The stabilizing forces in her life, family and worship, had been put aside while she watched the Sandmaster.
9 days and it will all be over.
Ace exited the Hall of Judgment to find Kenton and Eric waiting for her.
Senior Tract. We thought you'd stood us up.
My role was to provide protection for the Lord Mastral. And I see he is still alive.
Ah, well played.
But this quest of yours, what makes you think the Lord Merchant will agree to see you, Rykensha?
He may be a curtsying, but he's also a businessman, and this is business. Besides, he has to. It's professional courtesy.
From what I've heard, the Lord Merchant is a little bit lacking in courtesy, professional or otherwise.
He is a businessman. He'll negotiate as long as I have something he wants.
And that is?
I'm still trying to decide.
One would probably presume to find the Lord Merchant's office somewhere in the marketplace. Such was not the case. Vey's business office was situated on the northern side of the island, far from the hustle and exchanges of the marketplace. It wasn't on the same Kelsey Island. Vey liked to keep his social life and his business dealings separate, but it might as well have been. The office looked more like a mansion. The northern edge of Khazar was a rocky shelf with a steep cliff bearing the brunt of the river current. Vey's office sat overlooking the cliff, holding arguably the most scenic point on the entire island. To one side lay the river and horizon, and in the other direction one could look down at the entire city.
This is it.
Quieter place than I imagined, and bigger.
Hired tower guards stood at the doors to the office, with more posted where they approached the audience hall.
10, 11, 12.
What are you doing?
Counting the number of guards. Lord Vey certainly likes his guards, doesn't he? Paranoid, do you think?
Having a lot of money tends to make someone that way. The Lord Merchant is, by definition, the richest man in Lysand. Unlike the Lord Mastralship, which is elected, or even the Lord Generalship, which is inherited, the Lord Merchantship is granted to whomever holds the most wealth.
Oh, now I remember this from my old tutor. Technically, if a man gains more riches than the current Lord Merchant, he may steal the Taisha. Which, of course, is practically impossible, since each Lord Merchant inherits all of his predecessor's wealth, making it difficult for anyone else to match him.
Vey's waiting room was different than other Taisha. For one thing, it wasn't filled with common people like the Lady Judges or the Lord Artisans. Instead, the small chamber was packed with men in wealthy robes. They would be seen according to which one was willing to pay the most for an audience. The room was cramped, but the wide doors at the back were open, allowing all to listen to Vey's current audience. The Lord Merchant liked people to be able to hear him speak. Kenton stepped up to the admissions attendant, a young man in flowery red robes.
I need to see the Lord Merchant.
Really? And you are?
I'm the Lord Mastral.
Of course you are. Please, take a seat.
Kenton regarded the benches with distaste. However, when he turned back around, the boy had already left. The boy returned a moment later and gestured toward the seats again.
It will only be a few minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Kenton walked over to one of the benches and took a seat. Eric did the same.
Professional courtesy. You realize he probably intends to make us wait a few hours before seeing us.
Probably, though there is no use complaining about it.
There isn't? I've always found it relaxing to complain.
They had waited for 2 hours.
They said it would be a few minutes.
That was 2 hours ago. Or didn't you catch my sigh?
Maybe I can find a way to pass the time.
Kenton reached into his sand pouch, running the grains through his fingers.
You wouldn't.
Are you doubting my threshold for boredom, old friend?
Not me.
Kenton called the sand to life. Every other person in the room jumped visibly, several of them pulling back with pale faces. Slowly, Kenton ordered the sand out of his hand, forming a tiny ribbon barely a few grains wide.
What? Oh, by the sand god, no!
The ribbon rose toward the center of the room, wiggling slightly in the air and leaving a glowing trail behind it. Kenton leaned his head back, imagining a pattern in his mind. The ribbon continued to move, wrapping around itself, moving like a needle and thread worked by an invisible hand. It twisted, looped, and curled, creating a complex pattern in the air. The result was an expanding, radiant mosaic. It contained no specific picture. It was more a transfixing matrix of shifting lines and colors. The more his sand wove, leaving its trail behind, the more intricate the pattern became.
Huh, that's pretty. Though I don't think the merchant there agrees. The man looks terrified.
This? Oh, this is nothing. I started doing this years ago when I realized the DM's teachings could no longer help me. My control and precision outstripped the abilities of my teachers, but I couldn't master more than one ribbon, so they wouldn't promote me.
And you thought this would get you a promotion?
No. I just started to teach myself, to find ways to increase the delicacy of my touch.
The sand spun and wove. Kenton continued to add sand, depleting three of his four sand pouches in the process. Slowly, the room's occupants lost some of their fear as they stared up at the shifting mass of sand, following its lines with their eyes. There was a look of awe in their faces, almost a look of reverence. Until...
What are you doing?
Kenton looked over, not releasing his sand. Vey stood in the doorway. His diminutive form was angry as he stared at the sand.
How dare you practice your unholy art in my offices?
There is no law against sand mastery, Lord Merchant.
That will soon change, Raikensha.
Are you going to see me now, Lord Merchant? I could wait longer, of course, but I'd have to entertain myself.
Come in. The sooner we talk, the sooner I can get rid of you.
That's very kind of you, Lord Merchant.
As he spoke, Kenton drew the remaining sand back toward a bucket at the side of the room, dumping it there as it began to turn black. It was a short hallway, which turned to the right. At the end was a moderate-sized room with a large dais at the front. The dais had a desk on it. Kenton suspected that both dais and desk were efforts on Vey's part to mask his diminutive height. Eric didn't miss it either.
What a lovely office. So many levels.
Vey took his seat with an angry stare.
All right, Raikensha. What do you want?
Nothing but the graces of your lordship's support. You're a businessman, Lord Vey. The most influential in all of Lysand. One might say that business is your business. Thus, I believe I can offer you something worth your lordship's support. I am prepared to let you have sandmasters to do with as you...
I already know of your deal with the Lord Artisan. The same cajoling won't work on me, Raikensha. I can't make money off of your sandmasters. It would be unethical.
Ethics never mattered to the guild before.
It does when sandmasters are involved. Even if I were inclined to support you, do you know what my people would do to me if they heard I had voted for the DM?
Surely it wouldn't be that bad. After all, you always paid your tribute, didn't you?
That is completely different. We were legally bound to do so. If I supported you willingly, I would be forever marked. Ask her.
Vey nodded toward Ace, who stood quietly at the back of the room.
Tell me, Tract, have you ever regretted your betrayal of your people?
Ace didn't respond.
Now you travel with a sandmaster. As if your soul weren't already forfeit, you have to make absolutely certain to earn the Sandlord's wrath.
Kenton shot a look back at Ace. Fortunately, the cool-mannered Tract was acting with her customary lack of emotion. Or was she? Kenton blinked in surprise. No, Ace wasn't displaying her customary control. Her face was growing red, her eyes wide with anger. The rage Kenton saw rising in the normally cold-hearted Tract's eyes was a chilling sight. The Lord Merchant continued his baiting.
You are a disgrace. Your soul will wander the sands, exiled from the Sandlord. You are no better than they. In fact, you are worse. You are one of us, but a traitor.
Kenton, I think you might want to do something. This could become very ugly very quickly.
The rage and shame in Ace's face grew to be too much for him to abide. He called his sand to life. Kenton pointed sharply at Vay. The sand flew true, drilling through the Lord Merchant's table, shattering its wooden finish, and continuing on to pause just before the Lord Merchant's chest.
That is enough, Vay!
What's this? You threaten me in my own chambers?
You insult the woman I bring as a guest? An honored and widely respected member of the hall?
I hate you.
Good. You're true to your religion. Now, be true to your profession. What will it cost me to buy your vote?
I would sell my very soul first. Now, get out!
Come on. We're leaving.
Damn you, Rikensha! May the Sandlord purge you and all your unholy kind from
They emerged into the sun.
Well, that went about as well as we'd expected.
Unfortunately, but I had to be sure.
I'll bet Vay's still shaking with fear.
You've grown evil since I last knew you, Eric.
I doubt there is a Lysandon on Dayside who wouldn't find the prospect of Vay's discomfort amusing. Half of them probably owe him money.
Suddenly, a hand fell on Kenton's shoulder. He spun, only to find Ace standing behind him.
Ace?
Never do that again.
Do what?
Defend me.
If it's any consolation, Senior, I doubt that conversation could have ended any other way.
Regardless, no matter what you think, no matter what it looks like, I don't want your help. Do you understand, Rikensha?
I can't win with you, can I?
I thought that was obvious.
Agnorer. So what's next? That's the last of the Taishin. Unless you want to visit the Lord Farmer.
No. He'll vote with Vay, no matter what I say to him.
Back to the DM, then?
Yes. For now. I have to think. Vay is going to present the biggest problem. One that I have no idea how to overcome.
And the others? You have 7 Taisha, and I count 1 firm commitment from my father of all people.
It's not as if I expected this to go well. I need to find a way to overcome the DM's financial situation. If I could pay the Lord Artisan, then that would probably earn us both Wright's vote and the Lady Judge's.
Which, along with Delius, would give you 4. Who else?
The Lord Mason's representative, perhaps? I don't know how they will vote.
Brave heart, Kenton. Things will look brighter once we're back at the DM.
Back in the DM, they found a messenger waiting to deliver a note to Kenton. The boy stood in the courtyard, waiting nervously.
Lord Mastrel, this messenger arrived at the 8th hour for you.
What is your message, lad? Let me see. It's an invitation from the Lord Admiral. He's throwing a ball in my honor.
From Delius? I'd better be invited.
It doesn't mention you. It says I should bring my dark side beauty, if you can believe that.
Well, she is pretty.
Not the point.
And you're sure it doesn't mention me? Let me see that.
As Eric scanned the invitation, Kenton remembered something he had found earlier that day.
Tell me, lad, did you bring another message?
No, sir.
Kenton removed the message from one of his pouches.
Are you certain? You don't recognize this?
No, sir. Wait. Hand that to me.
Ace? Sure.
Surprised, Kenton handed the letter to Ace. The tract read it with intense eyes.
What is it?
Nothing you need concern yourself with.
Nothing of my concern? It was found on the floor of my room.
It is a message for me. You must have known that it would get to me somehow.
He? He who?
It relates to another investigation. Nothing to concern you, Rikensha. Be about your business.
Finally, Kenton gave up, tipping the boy with a half-lacked coin and sending him on his way.
Most generous. Thank you, Mastrel.
Delius will probably have quite a buffet. I can't believe he didn't invite me.
Duchess?
Chris stubbornly ignored the knock at her door. She lay curled in her bed, covers thrown over her, even though she didn't really need them in Dayside's heat. Given's pistol lay on the bedstand, its silver handle shining dully in the room's quiet light. The carving was exquisite. Chris herself had given it to him on his 16th birthday. He had treasured it from that day forward, always wearing it at his side.
Duchess, you have a visitor.
Tell them I'm sick.
I'll tell them you're moping if you like.
No. That would never do. I'll be there momentarily.
Chris glanced once more at Gavin's pistol on the bedstand. It wasn't as if she hadn't known he was dead. It just had hit her hard to hold this piece of physical evidence, and the way it had come to her with no warning. She rose and quickly selected a blue robe that was bright by Dayside standards, along with a pair of her heeled Darkside shoes.
You are a Duchess of Ellis.
She arrived at the spiral staircase with a mind full of questions. They evaporated as soon as she saw who was standing below, chatting with Bayon.
Been busy with the sandling hunt going the way it did.
You!
Hello, Chrysala. How have you been?
At Kenton's side stood the black-uniformed Kirstian Tract she had seen a few days before. But the other man, Eric, wasn't there.
I was about to eat.
Don't let me stop you.
Chris reached the bottom of the stairs and marched over to Kenton, who was looking her over with a confused eye.
You seem taller.
What do you mean by that?
Your shoes. They're very odd. They're so high.
They're called heels. Most women wear them on Dockside.
Why?
I don't know. To look taller. Why does it matter anyway?
Oh.
But tell me, what progress have you made?
Not much. I only have 8 days left, and only one of the Taisha has promised to vote for me. The rest range from undecided to downright hostile.
They walked into the dining room, where house staff were preparing the table. As he entered, Kenton noticed the roaring fire in the grate.
Whoa, what is that for?
Atmosphere. On Dockside, most rooms have a fireplace or a stove because we need the warmth.
Warmth? Why would you want that?
You've never been cold before, have you?
Well, Darkside of town is a little bit cold. I guess I can sort of see why you'd want a fire down here.
Oh no, Kenton. Oh dear, no. Darkside of town is about as cold as a room with four blazing fireplaces back in Ellis.
Then I have no idea what you are talking about.
Well, I suppose it makes sense. If it's never cold here and it never rains. But surely you use fire in cooking?
The sun cooks our food. Why would anyone use fire? That would burn the food.
Oh, my. Do you know, until now, I don't think I'd really thought about how fundamentally different our societies are. Fire is such a basic building block of society, and yet here it's almost unknown.
As Chris spoke, Kenton was admiring the room. He seemed especially interested in the grundlefish in their globes on the wall.
This is quite the place. Even mastrels don't live so well.
Thank you.
At that moment, the houseboy Idan stood waiting to catch Chris's attention.
Lunch is prepared, my lady.
Will you join me, Kenton?
I could eat.
Idan, set another place. What about your companion?
What? Ace? I'm not even sure if she eats. Perhaps if you have a few roasted sandmasters, she'd be willing to try them. She's curtsying, you see. She thinks sandmastery is blasphemy against her god.
Chris frowned as Bayon held the chair for her to sit.
It doesn't matter.
So why?
She's a spy from the Lady Judge.
Spy?
In essence.
You do like to make things difficult.
I don't. They just seem to get that way.
Is there something wrong with your chair? Your squirming is distracting me.
It's just so...
soft? It's not stuffed with sand.
I was going to say uncomfortable. It doesn't bear my weight. I feel like I'm going to sink all the way down to the floor.
That feeling is called comfort, Daysider.
If this is the dark side version of comfort, no wonder you people are always grumpy.
I'm not grumpy.
Bayon,
Oh no, Lord Mastril, do not bring me into this hole you're digging for yourself.
Anyway, I came here to show you this. The Lord Admiral is throwing a ball. He's asked me to attend and requested I bring you.
Oh, Kenton, are you asking me to a dance?
Hey, now, it wasn't my idea. Apparently your little performance at the Lord Artisan's has started a few rumors.
Oh, so it's my fault now?
Isn't everything?
One of these days, you will learn some manners.
So, are you coming or not?
A chance to meet another Titian? Of course I am. When is it?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow? What kind of forewarning is that?
You're right. I guess you'll only have 12 hours to paint your face rather than the usual... How long does all of that take, anyway?
Pris glared at him.
You've clearly made an impression on someone if the Lord Admiral would invite you.
Clearly. It seems that you're making progress after all.
Not really. The compromise you brokered with the Lord Artisan is meaningless, unless I can find a way to pay what the DM owes him.
Food was being served. Kenton looked at the dishes and recalled the food his mother would eat.
Don't the Sandmasters have any money?
No. Helis told me that the guild still presented the quarterly tribute to the DM, but that only amounts to a couple of hundred lakh.
Didn't you tell me that Sandmasters never paid for anything?
I did, yes.
In which case, where is the tribute money?
Excuse me.
Chris rose, following Kenton.
Chris, what are you doing?
He was at the front door.
Following you?
Don't you have anything better to do?
Actually, no.
Kenton stepped out onto the darkened street, followed by the tracked Ace.
Whatever you just realized, I'm the one who helped you think of it. I deserve to go with you.
Bayon appeared at the doorway behind them, shaking his head in irritation as he threw on his open-fronted dayside robe to obscure his weapons. He rushed to join them.
Duchess, wait.
But she was already gone. They were on the street now, in the dark side quarter known as Lanzar, heading in the direction of the Darksider town marketplace. Chris hurried in her heeled shoes to keep up with Kenton and Ace.
Well?
Sandmasters don't get paid, per se. However, the other seven professions have historically given us tributes, gifts, if you will, in exchange for our protection. The thing is, Sandmasters don't need money.
Because you can take whatever you want anyway.
Well, with some limitations. We can't just take from anyone. We're only open to goods or services offered by a merchant. And the Mastrals are the only ones who can actually do the taking. They're the highest rank of Sandmasters. So the question is, if the Mastrals can take whatever they want, what did they do with all the tribute money?
I don't know.
I don't either. There is someone who will know.
Who?
His name is Aloran. You won't know him.
They had entered the marketplace of Darksider Town. It was busier here, with the hubbub of street vendors vying for attention.
Wait a moment. If the Sandmasters are allowed to take whatever they want, then how can they be in debt? Their thefts are technically legal, aren't they?
There's a clause in the law that says the Mastrals are supposed to eventually pay for what they take. The law just doesn't specify a time frame for the payment. So, the Mastrals ignored it.
So, exactly how long has this debt been accruing?
Longer than I'd like to admit.
They continued through the market, Chris struggling to keep up in her heels. She didn't know what she would do when they left Darksider Town and she had to walk on Khazar's uncobbled streets. Perhaps the heels hadn't been such a good idea. Kenton didn't show any signs of slowing down, however, so she did her best. About halfway through the Darksider marketplace, she almost fell down when a man in dark robes knocked into her.
Oh, look where you're going!
The man regarded her with his angry olive-skinned face as she righted herself and hurried after Kenton.
Who are you talking to, Duchess?
Just some nobody. It's funny, though. I don't think I've seen a Curtsian down here before.
Did you say a Curtsian?
Yes, I...
The only reason a Curtsian would come to the Darkside Quarter is from me.
What do you mean by that?
Kenton froze, realizing for the first time that they were surrounded on all sides by figures in dark robes, lurking in doorways, emerging from alleyways. Each figure was raising their arm, and Kenton saw the glint of the wrist-mounted Zinkalin they wore there as they prepared to fire.
Stay behind me and get down! More assassins? This is getting old very quickly.
speak dynastic, dammit! I don't understand Losadin!
May I suggest you worry about the language barrier later, Duchess? For now, you need to get to safety.
Kenton threw himself toward a nearby stall, while Bayan pulled Chris to safety.
Rekentia went this way!
The crowds parted to reveal Ace standing squarely in the middle of the street, firing her own weapon, completely ignoring the danger to herself.
Okay, so Ace has a death wish. Good to know!
Kenton called his sand to life. A second later, he jumped. Kenton spun in the air above the covered Darkside Marketplace, rising dangerously close to its low ceiling. He counted quickly. 4 Zinkal archers in the front, 3 more approaching from behind. Frightened Darksiders ran in every direction.
Where's the 8th assassin?
Kenton fell as the archers began to fire at him. He propelled himself down with his sand, dodging the shots. As he landed, he saw a nondescript Losandan man pointing his arm at Bayon.
Bayon, look out!
What is it?
The Darkside warrior spun, pulling out his pistols. However, the Losandan man, instead of firing his Zinkal, decided to tackle Bayon, throwing him against the side of a carapace shop. Bayon's pistols dropped to the ground as the wind was knocked out of his lungs. Unfortunately, Kenton had no time to help him. The 3 warriors behind were almost upon him.
This is bad. Bayon's down, and I can't begin to process what Ace thinks she's doing. Face it, I have to draw their fire.
Kenton gathered his sand into a roughly man-shaped form and ordered it out into the street. 3 Zinkal arrows smashed into the decoy, making little patches of sand fall dead. Turkan-coated arrows. Immediately, Kenton ducked out into the street, sending his sand forward. The 3 Kirstians had taken cover beside shops, and they took aim at Kenton as soon as they saw him. They waited just a second to fire, however, the decoy still fresh in their minds. Kenton picked up a pot from a nearby shop, and as the men fired, he swung the pot at their arrows, knocking them out of the air. At the same time, he commanded his second ribbon to grab a second pot and then swung it at the Kirstian's heads. Despite missing his first target, he continued the barrage of pottery against the Kirstian assassins.
You guys forgot the first rule of fighting Sandmasters. Always keep your eyes on the sand.
2 assassins fell to Kenton's onslaught of pottery, but the 3rd dodged backward, swiping his hand at the stream of sand above him. The sand fell dead, the pot dropped to the ground.
Shella, this guy's learned quicker than I'd hoped.
Kenton backed up, falling in beside Ace, who had finally taken cover beside a shop. Bayon was still struggling with his combatant, who, now that his robes had fallen away, revealed himself to be the largest, most muscular Losandan man Kenton had ever seen.
So what now, Rekensha?
Chris had dropped to the ground in the confusion, but was now reaching for one of Bayon's fallen pistols.
I'm going to do something, Ace. Something you may find heretical.
Your very existence is heretical.
We can discuss that once we get out of this mess. Deal?
Why bother? What do you think you could possibly say to me that would change what is right from what is wrong?
Good point!
Just before Chris's hand found Bayon's pistol, Kenton's sand snatched it and its companion off the ground.
What? No!
Kenton jumped back into the street, surprising the 4 Kirstians in front who had been approaching carefully. They looked up as Kenton raised his arms toward them, a ribbon of sand extending from each hand. Each ribbon gripped one of Bayon's pistols. The Kirstians ducked backward, expecting him to swing the pistols at their heads. Instead, Kenton positioned them directly in front of his enemies and used his sand to pull the triggers, the way he had seen Bayon do out in the desert. The 2 assassins fell dead. Kenton turned the weapons toward the 2 remaining Kirstians. After 4 shots, Kenton was pretty much certain he was deaf. His ears rang as he dropped the pistols, jumping back toward cover to avoid an attack from behind. Fortunately, Ace had been watching the other 3, and she dropped the man with an arrow in the arm as they tried to fire at Kenton. Kenton hit the ground as the other assassin fired, half expecting to have an arrow somewhere in his body. However, he appeared unharmed.
I made it! Bayon!
Bayon was still grappling with his monstrous opponent. Suddenly, Bayon moved, pushing his opponent off him with a surge of strength. Bayon reached out toward his leg with a free hand. The Darkside warrior whipped a very wicked knife out of a sheath at his calf.
You caught me unawares last time, assassin. Let me return the favor.
Bayon rammed the knife up toward the man's heart. Then he ripped the weapon free, jumping up into a defensive crouch and shooting Kenton a look. The remaining Kirstians grabbed their wounded comrade and started to run off. Within a few minutes, Tracts swarmed over the Darkside Marketplace. Only Ace's presence saved Kenton from answering their lengthy list of questions.
My ears are still ringing.
Lower your voice, Kenton.
Sorry. Sorry. How do you use those things without deafening yourself, Bayon?
Your hearing will come back. It's just shock.
Kenton knelt down to examine the man Bayon had killed.
He's Lysandin, and his scarring looks fresh.
What does it mean?
I don't know. The Curtian High Priest has a contract on my life. But this is the first Lysandin who's tried to kill me. Ace, why would a Lysandin want me dead?
I heard that the Akkar promised to let Lysandins join Curtian families, Rykentia, if they dedicate themselves only to him. I had assumed that rumor to be false until now.
So, I'm not only being hunted by the most avid Akkar in recent history, but also the most open-minded one?
This new Akkar is different. He has strange ideas, and he's determined to win the choosing. If he lets Lysandins join, then his Daikin will grow faster, giving him more power. Right now, you're the only thing standing in his way. He told the Curtian people that he had destroyed the Mastrals. But then you came back. Your continued existence makes him look like a fool and a liar.
No wonder he wants me dead.
How come every time I go somewhere with you, I almost get killed?
Chris stood in Kenton's eyeline, her arms folded, staring him down with a skeptical eye.
Trust me, Chrysala. I would avoid this if I could.
I want the story. The entire story. No more dodging. Who are you? What is going on? And why does everyone want you dead?
Okay. I guess I owe you a proper explanation before one of us gets killed. Let's find somewhere quieter. And let the Tracts do their work.
Fine.
How do you walk in those things?
They found a nearby stall selling street food, the smells from which reminded Kenton of his mother's cooking. Once they were served, Kenton and Chris sat outside, side by side, on a small bench seat that faced out into the marketplace. Chris watched Kenton with interest as he spoke between mouthfuls, drinking frequently to rehydrate after expending so much energy in the fight.
My mother was a Darksider, and my father was a Mastral. Some in the DM said that was why his children showed no talent for sand manipulation, because of her. I wanted so much to join the DM and prove them wrong. I got accepted on a technicality, and I struggled to do what the other students found easy. So instead, I spent hours honing my skills until I could do things no other Sandmaster could. But they were small things, just tricks, really. I wanted so badly to impress my father. I think at some point that desire became a compulsion. I got angry. I did things just to spite him. I was kind of a brat. I was still being a brat when he died.
Oh.
The Mastrals were ambushed out in the Curla Sands. It was a setup. I still don't know how or why. My father, my friends, almost everyone died, Chris. We didn't have the power to stop it, and for a while I wasn't sure I had any power at all.
You mean when we met? You thought you'd lost your powers?
Yeah, I really did. But maybe I'd overextended, or... I don't know, it's all so messed up. What I know for sure is I have to somehow fix the DM. We've been too remote, and so we didn't notice all the factions rallying against us. And now the new Akkar High Priest is drumming up hate for us among the Curtians. Well, I'm running out of friends, Chris.
I'm your friend, Kenton. We'll figure it out.
Thank you.
How's the food?
This? Awful.
Mine too. Shall we go back to the DM and make a proper start on this?
Yes. I think we had better.
They reached the DM a little later, entering without fanfare. Kenton was quietly relieved not to run into Dryle this time around, although his lack of visibility probably only meant he was scheming somewhere out of sight, Kenton knew.
The DM's ledger is kept in the Lord Mastral's room. I've pored over it before, but maybe there'll be a clue in there.
You're not going to fly me up there, are you?
Are you still sore about that?
Triss just looked at him, her expression uncertain, hidden as it was behind the dark glasses she wore to protect her eyes. As they crossed the courtyard, Eric walked in through the main gateway, munching happily on what appeared to be some sort of flatbread covered with frosting. He took a look at everyone and frowned slightly.
All right, what did I miss?
We're going to ransack the Diem.
Want to help? Sure. What are we looking for?
Money. The Mastrels left behind coins.
Oh, sure, I could have told you that. How do you think I bought this? Which is delicious, by the way.
Kenton froze, looking down at the pastry with stupefied eyes.
Wait a minute. You knew the Mastrels left behind money?
Of course. I found it on the first day. You did say that I could help myself to one of the rooms, you know. I figured that included whatever I found in the desk drawers.
Show me.
Eric led them to his rooms, which turned out to be very similar to Kenton's. It had the same sand-covered floor. Chris assumed that was to facilitate sand mastery, and a similar scattering of furniture, including several of the sand-stuffed chairs. Eric's main room had a smaller side room, just like Kenton's, and inside it was a desk.
Okay, now here we are.
Eric proceeded to open the top drawer with a flowery gesture.
I found this on the first day. A hidden drawer, see?
You did?
Well, surely you expected me to check the room over before I put my stuff here.
He reached under and undid a hidden latch. The latch unlocked some mechanism that let him remove the entire drawer. He turned it over, turned a switch on the bottom, and opened a secret compartment in the back.
There! Pastry fund!
Kenton knelt beside the drawer, eyeing the pile of coins inside. There were some of the silvery hematite coins that Chris recognized as 100 lakh marks, but most of them were Tiger Eye 10s or Blue Marble 5s. Kenton did a mental calculation.
There's probably only 800 lakh here. How much of it did you spend?
Oh, about 50 lakh or so.
There isn't as much as I expected. This should have been accruing for years. Even divided amongst 20 Mastrels, there should be more money here.
Maybe the other rooms have more. I checked a few rooms before I chose this one. Most of them had desks like this one.
Kenton stood.
All right, let's check. Eric, you work on this side of the balcony and move right. I'll go left. Chris, you take the rooms on the other side of the hallway and move right. Bayon, you can go left.
Wait! You don't give me orders?
Well, Duchess, you did say you wanted to be a part of what he was doing.
You're not helping, Bayon.
Money is being counted on the desk, all of it in small coins. Their ransack of the DM took considerably less time than Kenton had expected. It turned out that desks like the one in Eric's rooms were standard issue for Mastrels, and each one had a false bottom drawer where they had stored their coins. As they searched, Kenton briefly considered how relatively unimaginative the Mastrels had been. Each one of them hid their money in exactly the same place. But that had been one of his big complaints about the DM's leadership, their closed-mindedness. It felt odd, pillaging his own home. But the Mastrels didn't need their money anymore, and it was going toward a good cause. In the end, they gathered all the coins in the center of Kenton's room, piling them like a bandit's illicit hoard. They were fewer of them than Kenton had hoped. Far fewer.
That's about 5,000, maybe 5,200.
That's a far cry from 200,000, isn't it?
You could say that.
So where's the rest of the tribute money gone?
Without a translator to help, Chris frowned, trying to follow the conversation that had reverted to Daysider.
Kenton, did you just say 2,000?
No, 200,000. That's how much the DM owes.
200,000 luck? That's how much you owe?
I warned you it was big.
The jewels I sold were only worth 20,000. 200?
Kenton looked across the room to Master Aloran, who was sitting gazing out the open balcony.
Aloran, how does the DM pay its servants?
It doesn't, Lord Mastrel. The Lord Artisan pays them.
I thought as much. Take this money and tell the servants that we'll be paying them from now on. Use it to buy whatever the DM needs over the next week.
Yes, Lord Mastral.
Kenton sat down, running his hands through his hair.
Never mind, Kenton. You tried.
Chris sat in one of the chairs, staring at the pile of coins.
If only we knew where your father's money went.
Kenton nodded. In every room, they had found at least a few coins, with one noted exception. Praxton's desk had been empty. Kenton had searched through the room, poking at cupboards, rattling chests, searching for false backs on closets, but had found no luck. Praxton's stash of coins, if he had one, was nowhere to be found.
He probably spent it.
Where? Everything is free.
Not everything. Mastrels can't commandeer boats, for one thing.
That's true.
Forgive me for asking, but would that matter?
Khazar's survival depends on shipping. The population here is so large that daily shipments of food are necessary to keep everyone fed.
Boat hulls have to be constructed completely of wood. If they use carapace, the first dent or chip could sink the entire vessel. The law has a clause excluding them from the Mastral's ability to demand goods because they are so valuable. But my father never traveled anywhere.
Except to meet your mother, presumably.
Yes, but even so, why would he spend money on a boat?
I've always thought sand masters were weird. Present company accepted. Maybe he just felt like it.
Great theory.
Or?
What?
What about the chairs in here?
What do chairs have to do with boats?
Nothing. I've discarded the boat idea. Where do they make chairs like these?
Denka?
Exactly, my friend, exactly.
What are you two talking about?
Denka. It's one of the Rim Kingdoms.
Where the Sandmasters have no legal right to steal.
Of course. No wonder the Mastrels didn't have as much money as we assumed. They might get goods in Khazar for free, but many of their most expensive items were foreign. They would have to use coins to commission those. I should have thought of that.
It was a nice idea, though, having a mountain of coins to cover your debts. Instead, you've at least got enough here to buy pastries.
Probably not once Ilorin has paid the servants. Unless you don't mind sharing.
Outside, Kenton walked Chris down to the pier that served the DM.
Thank you for your help today, Chris.
I'm only sorry it wasn't more productive.
Well, we tried. I'll see you tomorrow for the Lord Admiral's party.
Ninth hour. You won't get killed before then?
Assassin's day off.
They shared a smile which hid their mutual fear as Bayon helped Chris into the waiting ferry boat.
Watch your step, my lady.
Thank you, Bayon. Farewell, Kenton.
Farewell.
Chris left, feeling slightly despondent. For a brief time, Kenton had thought one of his problems solved, but in the end, nothing had come of it. She kind of felt guilty, as if the failure were her fault because she had made the comment that gave him the idea. Chris rode in silence, reviewing what she had learned. Kenton wasn't as powerful as she had assumed. He was just doing the best he could with what he had, just like her. As she pondered, however, she realized something. Despite their lengthy conversation in the Darksider Market, Kenton had left out one topic, sand mastery. He had told her almost nothing about the art itself, why it worked, how much a single person could lift, that sort of thing. He had told her that he wasn't very powerful, but had given no details about what that meant. Her betrothed had thought the Sand Mages would be able to help Elis against the Dynasty. She hadn't even been sure they were real. Well, the Sand Mages were real, and Chris was coming to know one of them fairly well. She had seen what Kenton did today. That kind of power could be useful in the coming battle with Skaven. At that moment, Bayon intruded upon her private musings.
It appears that the Diem has quite a few holes it needs to dig itself out of, Duchess. It could be a lost cause.
But sand mastery isn't, Bayon. And it could just be what we need.
That was it. She planned to find out how sand mastery worked and bring the secret back with her to Elis. It was fifth hour. It was morning.
Sun, Lord, bless me.
When Ace climbed up the short ladder on the side of her house, she left behind the world.
Sun, Lord, bless me.
She left behind the city. She left behind the markets, the hustle, the yelling, the confusion, the pain, and even the duty. She entered a realm that, to one insignificant woman, was holy. She walked reverently across the roof, wearing only a simple tan Kirstian robe. Here, away from Portside, the buildings were smaller, and her own home rose above those surrounding it.
Sun Lord, bless me.
Quietly, mumbling the prayer of the Sun Lord, she walked over to a battered trunk sitting by the roof's side rail. Thieves had likely seen the trunk and inspected its contents dozens of times. It bore no lock, and any with the determination could jump from a neighboring rooftop to open it. Those who had done so had undoubtedly been disappointed. Ace lifted the trunk's lid.
Sun Lord, bless me.
The trunk was filled with sand. Normal, white sand. At least to the casual observer, that is how it would appear. Reverently, Ace removed the cloth mat that sat across the top of the sand, unrolling it on the ground before her. Then she took a scoop of sand in each hand and sprinkled it across the mat.
Sun Lord, bless me.
Though it looked unremarkable, the chest of sand was perhaps the most valuable possession Ace owned. Years ago, she herself had made the trek to the deep sands to fill it. This sand had been taken from holy ground. Removing her shoes, a symbol of pagan Losand, Ace knelt on the sand-strewn mat. Then she turned to face her god.
Sun Lord, bless me.
She knew, technically, that the sun was not the Sand Lord. It was only a manifestation of his divine presence. Still, the great orb was a reminder of the Sand Lord's power. As Ace knelt, her hands spread before her, her eyes closed. She could feel its power.
Sun Lord, watch over me. Sun Lord, guide me in all that I do.
Heat bathed her. It warmed each breath she took, giving life to all of Dayside. Its strength was acknowledged by every inch of Ace's skin. It was striking even through closed eyelids. As Ace knelt before it, the entire world seemed to grow silent, and for a moment, she was alone before the Sand Lord.
Forgive me this day, as my duties force me to adopt the role of the Rakensha's protector, contrary to your teachings. Forgive me this day, as my duties have forced me to kill men whose motivations I secretly applaud.
Ace was beginning to wonder at her own closely held beliefs.
Forgive me.
Could she really be both a Tract and a Kirstian? Twice now, her role as Kenton's protector had forced her to fight people of her own race. That in itself was not a problem. Kirstians frequently fought one another. The problem was that she was forced to fight and kill men whose motivations she secretly applauded.
Sun Lord, watch over me. Sun Lord, guide me in all that I do. Sun Lord, watch over me and guide my thoughts and hands.
The Lord Mastral deserved to die. It was cruel to consider, but it was the truth. Recently, the Akkar had declared that Losandan people who joined Kareen would be allowed to seek adoption into a Kirstian family. Traditionally, non-Kirstians who joined Kareen were still relegated to second-class blessings in the Sandlord's eternal kingdom on the sun, servants to those of the true blood. For the first time in history, the Sandlord's eternal blessings were available to all. The Akkar's declaration felt right to Ace. She had always believed it would occur. All men were equal before the law. It made sense that they would all be equal before God. Only one thing remained a blight on Losand, the Sandmasters.
Sun Lord, watch over me.
The Akkar had recently hinted that if it weren't for the Diem, Losand's high population of believers would earn the nation a holy status equal to that of the Kurla. Only Kenton stood in the way. And Ace was responsible for keeping him alive. Perhaps that was why Ace's control seemed to be slipping more and more lately. She had found herself crying for no reason after the attack the day before. Thankfully, she didn't think the Sandmaster had seen her. Her emotions seemed to be raging uncontrollably, threatening to burst free at any moment.
Ace, are you up here?
Melis knew that she rose early in the morning to pray when the moon was pointing directly east. He knelt beside her on the mat, his hand resting lightly on her shoulder.
Melis? Oh, sorry, did I wake you?
No, I've just made Melanie's breakfast. Are you all right?
I don't know what's happening to me. All my life I have only wanted control. Yet it seems to be the one thing I will never obtain.
Have you ever wondered if, perhaps, this is what the Sandlord wants for you, my love?
This? God, law, and family have always been the pillars of stability in my life. But now...
Oh, Ace.
No. I want you to leave Khazar. It's not safe for you here.
Ace, I... Is it really necessary?
Sherzan is too powerful, Melis. I can't protect you. A raid on the boat races went wrong. He knew we were coming. He pulled out all of his money and left a note for me. Tain delivered it.
Ace took her husband's hands in hers and looked into his eyes.
Take Melly and go. Use our savings and buy passage on a ship to the south. Pick a town. Don't tell me which one. Go to the Hall of Judgment and tell them who you are. Request sanctuary and stay there until you get word from the Hall Judge that Sherzan has been captured.
But that could take months.
We're close now, Melis. This is the first time Sherzan has run from us. Half his advisors are in prison. His organization is close to falling apart. Someone will kill him soon. If not us, then a rival. I will see Sherzan captured no matter what other duties I have been given. I think I know who he is.
Melis said nothing. Ace took his silence as assent. She opened her eyes, leaning over to kiss him on the forehead.
I don't know what the Sandlord has planned for us, Melis. I suspect that Sherzan is close to panic. I'm sure of it. Panicked men do stupid things. If you hear word that I have died, do not come back to Khazar unless the Hall Judge assures you they found my body.
You're doing the right thing.
In his room in the DM, Eric ignored the comment and continued to pack his things.
You're not abandoning him. He doesn't even need you, really.
Eric continued to pack, stuffing the rest of his clothing in the bag. He paused, however, shooting a look over his shoulder, a look toward Kenton's rooms.
Aren't you listening to me?
Eric turned, looking at himself in the mirror. He looked very indignant. Indignant and alone.
You have no purpose here. You're useless. What do? Eat Kenton's food and make the occasional sarcastic comment? He doesn't need you.
He looked over the rooms that had been his for the last 6 days. Only 6 days. It hadn't been very long.
You spoke with your father. You did what you came here to do. Now it's time to get moving again. You know what happens when you don't keep moving.
Eric nodded solemnly.
Good. I'm glad we agree. Now keep packing.
Eric moved to comply, stuffing his remaining possessions into his dark side canvas bag. He paused on the last one, however, a polished carapace scabbard. It was a simple thing, inscribed with the crossed spears that were the symbol of the tower. Chipped with age, the scabbard was hardly the finest possession he had ever owned. It was, however, one of the most precious.
You think he won't do it again?
Eric didn't know why he had kept the scabbard all these years. Kenton probably didn't even remember giving it to him. Too valuable, as it was, but a kind gift between the closest of friends. He could still hear the youthful Kenton's voice in his mind.
You'll be Lord General, and I'll be Lord Mastral. Think of what we'll do.
All these years, he still thinks it was your father who drove you away. He doesn't have any clue. You think he's changed, but he hasn't. He will still find a way to use you in his plans, in his schemes. He cares nothing for others. He is selfish. All he cares about is his fight, his successes, his arguments. He doesn't even pay attention to what he does to those around him.
This time, however, Eric's cajoling failed. Eric knew better. If Kenton hadn't offered himself as a sacrifice, if he hadn't for once in his life done something noble, Eric could have believed him to be the same person, no matter how solemn he had become. The offer to fight Dryal, however, changed things.
But I just can't avoid the fact that he's going to need me, can I?
With that, Eric slowly began to unpack his bag. He caught a glimpse of his reflection in the mirror.
You are an idiot.
Eric continued to unpack.
He'll use you. Before this week is out, all you have striven to become will be lost. You will return to the way you were before, an automaton ordered around by the will of others.
Eric continued to unpack.
And that won't be the end. Then it will happen. What you always feared. You'll not only follow them, you'll become like them. You will take control of the lives of others. You'll give the orders, and they will follow you. They will die for you. Can you handle that, Eric? The responsibility? The pain?
This gave Eric pause. His eyes shot over toward the scabbard, sitting on one of the room's chairs. He had thrown the sword away long ago. He should have done the same with the scabbard.
Aisha, you're a fool. I know.
It was sixth hour, early morning, as the locals measured it.
Duchess, you requested I... Oh, my!
Come over here.
Cinder marveled at the room. What had been Chris's bedroom had undergone a massive transformation over the last 12 hours. Her beauty products lay in a jumble on the floor, and the table which had held them now sat next to the far wall. Beside it stood her bedstand and the bench-like table from Bayon's room, along with Bayon himself, relegated to fetcher and carrier while Chris indulged her curiosity. Upon this extended group of tables sat a jumble of instruments, ledgers, and glass containers of all sizes. Chris's scientific equipment, packed carefully before her departure and nearly forgotten in all that had happened, had finally been remembered. On her walls, she had pinned charts of the moon's turnings, as seen from Darkseid. She intended to make similar charts from Dayside, measuring the moon's distance from the horizon during different times of day, a method that would eventually let her test Dovendel's postulated circumference of the planet. Beside the moon charts, she had pinned several maps of Dayside, which she had sent Entis to purchase for her. On one of these, she had marked the route her expedition had taken, as closely as she could estimate. Another chart listed the days she had been on Dayside, along with